Welcome to yet another exciting season of Sisters in Conversation, the podcast. I'm your host, Tebelo Motsane. I'm an attorney by profession and the founder of a platform called Sister in Law, which is a platform dedicated to empowering women through legal education. On this podcast, I profile women of color in the legal profession in an attempt to celebrate their contribution to the profession. We journey through their individual stories of perseverance and resilience and overcoming challenges like imposter syndrome, racism, and sexism, to name a few. I hope you're geared up for what promises to be another insightful, informative, and empowering season. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to this podcast. Welcome to another episode of Sisters in Conversation. I'm your host, Tebelo Motsane. I'm an attorney by profession and the founder of a platform called Sister in Law, which is a platform dedicated to empowering women through legal education. On today's episode, I'm joined by Slindile Pearl Mhlongo. She graduated from the University of Cape Town, got admitted as an attorney, went overseas, and then came back and heeded the call to the bar. Welcome to the show, Sli. How are you?
Hi, Tebelo. Thank you for having me. I'm well. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. I just stumbled there because I was like, yeah, offline, we specifically said you have been an attorney, or you did get admitted as an attorney because you're an advocate. So I was just...
In millennial fashion, I took a while to figure out exactly what it is I wanted to do. So that's quite accurate.
I love that. That's the content that we signed up for on this very podcast. So I mean, Slindile, without any further ado, let's get straight into it. Can you tell us a little bit about who you are? Tell us a little bit about your upbringing, and then we'll speak about why you decided to pursue a career in the legal profession.
You know, lawyers love talking about themselves, but whenever anyone asks me to describe a little bit about me, I'm kind of stunted a little. So if we were over a glass of wine, I'd probably tell you unsolicited information about myself.
Question
is a little bit stumbling. I grew up in Durban. I think that's a good place to start. I was born, raised, and grew up in the beautiful city of Durban. I was raised in Mlazi Township. I am a last born, if that's any relevant factor to anything. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so I was raised by my mom and my grandmother, did a great collaboration there. And then that is the brief background I can give, I guess, about my upbringing.
And just tell us a little bit about, you know, how, I mean, this is obviously a podcast about women that celebrates women, specifically in the legal profession, but more relevant to what you've just told us, being raised by your mom and your grandma. How has that shaped the kind of woman that you are today? And what role have they played in this legal that we're speaking to now?
Sure. I always say my mom and I were an odd pairing. I think the universe was quite odd in deciding we should pair together because she's a little bit more tough than I am.
Yeah.
I guess I parrot a little bit of her toughness. She's a lot wiser than I am in most things. She's pretty savvy. She's fast on her feet. I think a lot of who I am is mirrors what I observed and perceived growing up. She wasn't in any professional sector, but she got things done. And I think that's kind of modeled who I am and how I approach life. My grandmother, the matriarch of the family who's now passed, kept me at her hip. And I whenever I came back from home from school, she'd be waiting for me at the bus stop. I used to come home quite late from sports. She'd carry my bag. Up until she really was quite frail, but she insisted on carrying my very heavy school bag and walking me home. And yeah, they really did a fantastic effort at what, in the absence of them, I think I would have been very soft-spoken, a little bit more reserved and a little bit on the shy end of the spectrum. And I think they've toughened me up a little bit. So yeah, that's really, yeah.
Sure. So my next question also just has to do with you saying your mom wasn't, part of any profession, but she got things done. And I'm also inclined to believe that in the township, we didn't have much exposure to, the careers that existed outside of like nursing, teaching, maybe being a
Sure,
police.
sure.
So how did you come to learn about law as a possible profession for you to pursue? What kind of opportunities were
Oh.
you exposed to in the very, very limited information we had back then or growing up in a township?
Yeah, you make me sound so old. I feel quite old. But that is accurate. My grandmother was a nurse. She was retired by the time I was it was time for me to go to varsity. And most of my aunts are teachers. So that is really the sector that I was raised around. Law fell on my lap by chance. It was sort of an act of rebellion at some point. I think I was intended to either do medicine or engineering. So I did your core accounting, science, bio, pure maths. And yeah, so first set in class. Part of the little top achievers and over eager beavers, and then when it came to applications, I'm not I don't quite have any inspiration behind it, except that I really, really wanted to do history, but I couldn't because it was dictated to me what I ought to do for my venture past grade nine. And I knew that history would have been so cool. And the kids who did history always looked so cool. And I thought, oh, maybe I should have been like a historian or something in literature. I really enjoyed English. And then when I applied, I tactically applied for a BCom law and then an LLB. And then I just quietly did that. I think my mom left me to my own kind of devices, and I was quite an independent kid. I didn't have to run anything past her. But I do recall when the acceptance letters came in, she was a little bit confused as to how we landed up in the law sector when we had tacitly agreed that I would be an engineer or a doctor. And I remember just how unimpressed she was. She was just like, oh, lawyers don't really do much. And like, they just have empty briefcases and ride the train. And I was just like, oh, I mean, that's disappointing to hear at the end of the line. I can't really reverse my application. But here we are, surprise, I'm going to be a lawyer. But yeah, there was no real inspiration behind it. I think it was just an act of rebellion at the time, whatever my 17-year-old mind thought that would do to shift my fortunes. But I just decided, oh, I think I want to be a lawyer. And then there wasn't really anything I didn't meet with the requirements, so I applied. Yeah.
Sure,
Yeah.
love that. And how did a girl from like Umlazi make it all the way to the opposite coast, basically, all the way in Cape Town, Western Cape? What led that decision, and how was that transition from, being a KZN girl to then going
Sure.
to the Western Cape?
I there was a huge debacle. She can't go to Cape Town. Cape Town is too far away. No one visits Cape Town. No one drives past Cape Town. Like
Sure.
rather UP or Joburg. We have family there. I remember being bribed with a car. I'll buy you a car if you go to UKZN.
Oh my
I
goodness.
promise. And I was just like so determined to go to Cape Town. I don't know, I just thought it'd be really cool. And then my gran was the final decision. My mom was all teary-eyed, which it was a sight for me because I was just like, why is she crying? But my gran was the one who was just like, oh, just let her go. Let her see different parts of just whatever South Africa has to offer. It do no harm. She's very tough, and she'll be fine. And I think my mom was just anxious, but I got a call that my tuition would be partly paid for. So that was a compelling decision, I guess. And then it was, oh, okay, Fine, then let's go to Cape Town. So so that's how I landed up in Cape Town. Best decision I ever made, really. I truly just don't think that I could have blossomed anywhere else. So that was quite a great decision. Again, no real advice behind it. I didn't know anyone in Cape Town. I didn't know anyone at UCT, but I was just like, oh, this looks like a little bit of me. And
It's a bit of an adventure.
yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So, how did you get the part of your expenses or studies being covered? Did you apply for a bursary? Did you get a scholarship? Was it because of
I
your...
did cast my net a little bit wider. There were tuition opportunities at the time. Like I said, I feel so old and dated. But back in 2012 would have been my first year, so 2011, there was quite a bit of opportunity in Cape Town with regard to just transformative measures to ensuring that they transform the profession from the seedling up, I think. Of course, that wasn't really the thought, but in hindsight now I see that. But the profession is widely white and male, and I think there were efforts made by the university to ensure that there is no hindrance to the attendance of kind of students who are coming from places as far as my own. So it was a tuition. I can't even recall. Like Kramer called me, the lady at Kramer. I remember her bleeding. She was so sweet, and it wasn't anything substantive, but it was enough to compel. Okay, she could go, and then I would obviously then fall under the radar of NSFAS or see how we subsidize the situation. But we were going to make it through. It wasn't the world, so it was definitely me just casting my net. I made various applications and random odd bits, and then of course, you get your SMS with the results, and then things kind of trickle in thereafter. It was a very last minute phone call, and it happened whilst there was that little caucus at home about where I should go and where I shouldn't go. But I remember Pauline calling me. Yeah.
All right, wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing that, Slee.
Sure.
And how did you manage to just integrate into, varsity life? You mentioned that you didn't know anybody in Cape Town. You didn't know anyone who was going to UCT. How was it just rooting yourself in campus life? And what was your campus experience like? Were you part of any committees, any social clubs, so forth?
I don't know. I think I lead life with this kind of grand delusion that like everything is fine. It's kind of just, I know people like, I realized for them, I don't know when I realized that, oh, I don't have a dad, was like in primary school or high school, where I was like, oh, people have dads and moms. But like, I think it was just the bubble that my mom kind of raised me in. I kind of just led life with a bit more confidence, and the audacity of a white man is what I call it now. But just you think like, oh, this is gonna be fine. There's no real hurdle or hiccup. But it was okay. It was really, really good for me. I think the university afforded me to kind of, you didn't have to fit into a particular box. You could kind of figure out what you are and who you are and grow along with it. And then, of course, you grow friendships. And because I lived at Res, there was community there. I was part of the Res leadership, and I was part of Kramer's leadership, and with the Law Students Council. So, you integrate into the system as best as you can. I played a bit of basketball competitively at school. So it was a pretty round life, I guess. Building community has always been very important to me. So I pursued that quite aggressively, and I think I formed some pretty strong foundational roots there. But like the odd bits and pieces, nothing phenomenal. Everyone kind of signs up for stuff, and yeah, I did a bit of a stint as a orientation leader, a stint as a Law Students Council member, a stint as a leader at Grass and Michelle Hall. So there were various opportunities for me to form community, and that was afforded to me by the institution, I guess.
So thank you so much for just driving the point on community. I often tell, the young women or the young learners who are following this platform that networking isn't this like thing that starts when you start working. By the time you are trying to really plant yourself or integrate yourself into communities at a working level, it's a little bit too late. You need to do it from as early as varsity. So, I mean, just looking back, what are some of the I don't know, like networking, like how can I put it? What are some of the connections that you've made that stand out to you that enabled you to sort of progress in your career? Are there any specific people that you met and that you were very intentional about, cultivating a relationship with them because you knew that they would be able to get you from point A to point B?
Again, it may just be a KZN brain thing, but it was pursuing people with the intent of some sort of progression has never kind of been in the back of my mind. I just naturally kind of enjoy, people will have mixed reviews about me. There is a little bit of a combative end of me. I do push boundaries. I push the envelope. We will engage in some meaningful debate. And most of my really good relationships stem from a, oh, we locked horns when we first met, and so there isn't quite an approach that I have or a blueprint that I have. I do note, I mean, your advice is obviously great, but some of us are a bit of a late bloomer. I think only at the bar did I kind of understand fully the concept of networking and ensuring that the right people know who you are and what. I was approaching my 30s then. I was 28 at the time. So that's when I started kind of figuring out, oh, it matters who you know, and it matters which relationship you're with. But at the innocent level of varsity, really, it was just a matter of keeping myself busy, and I liked doing stuff. I've always been obsessed with diary entries and organizing things, and I enjoyed event curating, and I enjoyed being part of kind of a unit that had some bigger purpose, and that was the driving force, really. But with regards to just what naturally ensued is that my relationships with people and my connections with people kind of really bloomed. And my referral letters were from Kelly Phelps, for example, who I didn't even know what a big name she was in criminal law. She was just my lecturer who I liked and who I went to after class to just figure out, I don't quite understand this. And she had this kind of warm reception to her that drew me to her. She drafted a phenomenal kind of referral letter for my application for candidate attorneys. But really, there was no quite intent in the back of my mind. It was just to keep myself busy, keep myself occupied, and see how to kill time, really. But I wish I did in varsity. I wish I pursued more intentfully relationships. I mean, you looked around and you could hear that there was some resonance and importance of someone being someone's a judge's son or a judge's daughter, or this is who I'm related to. That seemed important, I guess, in the room at some intervals, but it wasn't anything that advised me moving forward. There's some good relationships I have with people whose names are quite weighted and wouldn't really say out of humility. It was never back of my mind, really. I think maybe advice to my younger self would have been to actively pursue it a little bit more and make sure that I expand beyond just what's comfortable. And I don't know if I can speak vernac, but who I laugh with and I'm comfortable with, so I would advise younger me to kind of expand that and get to know more people. But it happened naturally over time.
I love it. I guess also what stands out for me is that even if you don't know the name of what you're doing, it still did contribute to
Very much so.
the overall being part of a community, you know? So yeah, it's only in your later years that you learned that that was actually just part of networking.
Yes, for sure, for sure.
I love
Yeah.
that. And then how did you then come to learn about Adams and Adams? I understand you did your articles
Yes.
there and you stayed on as an associate. Is that a
Yes.
job you got like in your third year of articles, fourth year of
Yeah.
studies? How
So
did you land that gig?
UCT really did drive that your LLB is linked to being an attorney. And I think they may have passively done it, and maybe there was just no conversation around it. But outside of being attorney, being an attorney, apologies, what else could I be? And there was an underlying kind of perception that was built by that, people become professors or become lecturers, or the younger lecturers that we had, who were obviously really smart, were people who kind of weren't successful at being an attorney. So I think that what happened unwittingly, or I am not sure, or if it was just my little brain, was the goal is to be an attorney. And there was nothing else really that you could do with your LLB. And there's nothing else you could be except an attorney. And of course, then they began the competitive pursuit of articles. However, I was part passive, part aggressive, part of the application process. I didn't apply anywhere initially, first year, but second year, I did feel the pressure a little bit because my peers started latching onto articles. There were just law firms that were pursued by my peers and my friends with regards to this is where I will go. They had the stickers on their phones, in the back of their phone, and it was just this is what I will do. I kind of felt a little bit misplaced identity-wise because I wasn't certain what it is where I wanted to go or where I thought was best suited. Maybe I didn't have the language at the time, but I think I didn't quite identify with any of the law firms as places that where I could possibly kind of root myself and blossom. So it was in the back of my mind with pressure, but I wasn't actively pursuing it. I was passively attending career fairs. I knew that at the end of it, you have to go to a law firm. That has to happen. It was just a matter of identifying which one. And then I think in my third year, Adams and Adams had a stand. And I don't recall anything remarkable with the conversation I had. It was an HR representative and, of course, an associate there. But I remember them talking about being part of Design Indaba. And I thought to myself, oh, it's really creative and really cool. I like that it's a law firm that looks into IP and copyrights, and I was like, oh, that's cool. And I think Design Indaba is what lured me in, and that's all I heard really in the conversation. And then I was like, I want to be a part of that where there is some creative pursuit. And then I grabbed my laptop and I sent my stuff to Zola Williams at the time. And after sending my things, I think we connected also, we spoke. And I was like, oh, they do stuff with Design Indaba, so I'm going to go to Adams and Adams. That was literally the decision. And then I was successful in my little hurdles with them. They had a VAC work, job shadows opportunity. They had a winter games situation that we attended, and I think they were just sussing us out and shortlisting. We had interviews, and I kind of thought, oh, I like it here. And that was the only firm I applied to and the only firm I got accepted to. So I landed up awaiting graduation for Adams and Adams.
Oh, I love that. I love
Yeah,
that when I
yeah.
miss design in Dava.
No, I was like, oh, I didn't even know what Design Indaba was, but I was like, oh, that's really cool. Like, they take time off work and they all go to the Design Indaba and they encourage their associates to like do creative things. I was misinformed, but and I misinformed myself, but that was really the driving thought behind it.
Sure, thank you. So just can you just expand further on intellectual property as an area of practice, just for the student or the young professional who's listening and they're like, what's intellectual property about? I mean, I know the popular criminal law, labor law.
Yeah.
So what exactly does a intellectual property practitioner do? What are the day-to-day, what does the day in the life of look like typically?
So it would be very misleading of me to say that I'm an IP specialist of any kind. But Adams and Adams is quite a huge ball player in IP and in the area of IP. And in my final year, I did choose an elective to do intellectual property. Intellectual property A and B, I think, was split into two semesters. And then there is, of course, the split of copyright. There is patents and there's trademarks. So you learn in theory in varsity what IP is. And then in practice, what I encountered with it, there's a split. So there's the very niche area, which is patents. I never got experience in patents, but usually candidates who had degrees in like in engineering or lived a past life doing some sort of really, really complicated degree, then become lawyers and then pursue patents is typically what happens. And there was always just one candidate who got into the patents department. So that's a niche, specialized area. And then where I kind of latched onto my first rotation as a candidate attorney, I worked in the trademarks infringement department. And a lot of it isn't quite litigation to its purest sense. It was a lot of letters of demand. Of course, we had the big clients there. We were kind of going after the little guy to take down what can be perceived as or look like or can be associated with the bigger brand, which would be our client. And of course, when you try to look like a certain brand, you may not be actively trying to deceive customers, but you want to be associated with its name is in essence what we were pursuing against. And it was a lot of drafting intensive work. I think my drafting skills were refined there, not quite into litigation stages. I didn't go to court much, but lots of letters of demand, lots of big names, lots of research into certain artistries and protecting certain copyrights and the extent at which copyrights can be protected. Really interesting stuff. But my true fire kind of was birthed in my second rotation when I went down to the commercial litigation department. So there is a split between patents and trademarks, but IP in essence is thoughts and ideas and how we can protect certain blueprints or core of an idea or a concept and whether it can be protected. Like literature is considered different to a certain design structure or artwork, and how far you can protect artwork is different to a blueprint of a design that is known and associated with a certain brand. Logos and protecting that. So defining the categories, and that is split between the three. And it was a really cool venture, I think. And that's in essence what IP is.
Thank you so much for that. And did you ever make it to one of the design endeavors?
No, there was no design endeavor. I'm just like, there's no design in Dava. We sit here all day just drafting letters. But no, there was no design in Dava. There was nothing exciting, really. It was just a mundane day at the office. Really cool people, really, really intelligent women. I was led by three female partners. And it was just phenomenal learning for them, being guided by them. There is just a certain measure of, there's just a certain edge that is there when you're led by a woman, and you don't realize it until you migrate to other departments. But I was in the sheltered environment where it's just mostly women. There was no gents around, and these really, really remarkable women. Who I worked under and for, and worked alongside with. And yeah, so that was my experience in that IP department that I took moving forward.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Lee. You really gave more than I had anticipated. So thank you so much. I'm sure somebody out there learned something new and they're probably already Googling Adams and Adams, just trying to figure out how they can plant a seed in that direction. And then you went overseas. I don't know if it was for you to pursue further studies or if it was just a gap year, but somewhere in that you then decided when you come back you want to pursue pupillage. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
So I stayed an attorney. I stayed and I found a home for myself in the litigation department. And then that little itch in the back of your mind of not too sure if this is what I want to do forever. And forever starts looking a little closer once you kind of cement yourself as part of a team. And then you're an associate in the team, you get allocated a candidate attorney, you're allocated a secretary, your name is on the door, and that looks like forever. And I think I got some cold feet there, but the firm was very, very supportive. I think when I expressed, listen, this is where I am and here's where my mindset is right now, they were very much just like, oh, well, when you're ready, let us know and your name will always be on the door. That I think we left on an okay term. I wasn't quite inspired, or I just wasn't fulfilled, and I felt out of place. And I thought that if I ventured into a different law firm, the feeling will remain. So I needed to kind of pull myself out and give myself an opportunity to just like basically have an aerial view of what it is that's going on, and then where I want to go and how I'm going to get there. And so I took an opportunity to go teach in mainland China. And so I departed in 2019. Mm-hmm. And so first wave of COVID, I was in the midst of it. It was just, I really wouldn't do things any different. It was a phenomenal year away. I got to find my feet and ground myself. It wasn't that constant panic. You're so young and we're working Monday through to Sunday and we're just worried and constantly diary notification after meeting, after consultation, after. I think slowing down the pace helped me kind of get some clarity as to what it is I want to do. I taught English for just over a year to some really, really phenomenal, smart kids. I spent my first wave of COVID in China, of course, and my mom's advice was to just stay put. And I stayed throughout until they lifted regulations. And I think that was March, April, when South Africa first went into their first wave. So I stayed through then. It was also a tactical approach because coming home in the midst of COVID would have been a bit complicated. So I think everyone was adjusting and shifting as to what the new norm would be and what's needed, what resources are needed. I don't think I would have been a popular recruit at the time for any other law firm. So I tactically decided to stay until the dust settles, in essence. And then opportunity to apply to the bar came about, and I approached my mentor, I approached the head of litigation who was my boss in my very first rotation. They all did my referral letters at Adams & Adams, some associates and some, so everyone was very supportive. And then I applied to the bar. So that was how we landed up there.
I love that. And how has your experience been now that you're on the other side? Being an advocate, have all the pieces finally fallen into place?
It's difficult to have reflections at the infancy of your practice, of course.
Sure.
Kind of shift quite violently, so it's a very volatile pursuit. No month is the same. It's very difficult confidently say, oh, this is what I'm going to do. But I absolutely love it. I think that I get to feed that yearning inside me to kind of reinvent myself at every turn and opportunity. No week is the same for me. And I think that's what really I was hungry for. I wanted change. I wanted a bit of a like momentum build up, and then I can slow it down myself. I'm in control of my own diary. It's a completely different world. And I absolutely love it. And I love it right now, of course. I think that once you experience greener pastures, or different pastures rather, there are no greener pastures. You get to kind of find your footing and build your rhythm and see where it is exactly you can define and identify yourself amongst the mix of things.
Oh, love that. Thank you. Thank you so much. I love that answer, actually. And then just as we come to the end of our conversation, earlier you had just mentioned something in passing. I don't think we got quite into it. But you mentioned about the profession being, you know, widely male and pale. I don't even remember what context we were mentioning it in. But just on the, I mean, we are here having conversations of 100 years of women in the legal profession. Just about half of that for Black women specifically in the profession. How are you paying it forward? Or rather, how can our peers, our age mates who do actually get to walk alongside some of the great, specifically Black women in law? We are in the generation where we get to also walk alongside them and not just stand on their shoulders. How are you personally paying it forward to ensure that in the next 56 years of Black women in the legal profession, there will be more and more of us, more and more of professionals who look like us?
You know, I'm like a pseudo millennial, pseudo boomer. So like the boomer in me wants to give a very conservative, palatable answer about, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day, and everyone's trying their best and there are measures in place. But there is a part of me that does kind of walk around a little bit of, not guilt per se, but there are a lot of privileges that I got to indulge in to ensure that I saw the finish line in pupillage. And and those privileges aren't extended all around. It's difficult for me at this placement in time to say confidently to the next person, come to the bar, you know, because I have observed and I know the difficulties. And I my little Hyundai was my wardrobe and my bookshelf and everything. And I was new to Joburg. I didn't know where I would live. I didn't know what I would do. It's an unpaid internship. It's difficult to confidently tell people, yes, of course, it's going to be grand to come through. I am trying to identify where I can authentically kind of exist in empowering the furtherance and the continued kind of existence of Black, of brilliant Black minds who fall on the wayside kind of because, well, it feels next to impossible. So I think the answer, if I am not going to be evasive, will be that right now as it stands, I don't think I've found my footing as to where I can make a difference, but I am in constant pursuit of it. I know what difficulties I experience, for example. I know what promises I've made to myself with regards to how I wish to extend myself into the profession. And I'm hoping that I'm brave enough one day to kind of have that materialize. So I'm always on the outskirts, weary of giving advice, weary of just quite conservative with pushing people along into the bar. But I do know that it's possible. There are leaders around me who look like me, who have a similar story to me and have a background similar to mine, who are absolutely just phenomenal and have pushed and have fought. And it is a fight that I recognize I still need to embark in. And I'm hoping that at least in my presence, I don't have a plan B, you know, I'm just like, this is my plan. Like the bar is my plan. And I'm hoping that my existence there and the commitments that I've made at least to the profession materialize in some form or another, and I make a difference beyond just what's available with regard to transformation and ensuring that Black women are visible. It's a work in progress otherwise.
Sure, thank you so much for that, Slee. I just wanna say that this podcast in itself is a form of mentorship, is a form of paying it forward. Sharing your story authentically with us is going to fall on someone's ears who needed to hear this. It is important for people to see women like you being featured on platforms like these, where you just share your story, because it is empowering to the next person who, for example, didn't even know that there's a career to be pursued in intellectual property or opportunities to go to teach English abroad, so forth. So this is already you agreeing and availing yourself for this conversation is your way of just planting the seeds of paying it forward. So thank you so much for your time and for being able to share your story so beautifully and authentically with us.
Thank you so much, Debra. I think it's the warmth of the host that encourages the guest, of course. Thank you for your time. I really appreciate it. And of course, we're here just watching you guys just be so intentional in your pursuit of empowerment. And we're in constant awe. And you inspire us as well with regards to how the small that we do and then the few interactions we have, the coffee that we go for, you know, just paying it forward in that regard, I guess. I think we all linked. That's the beauty of being a woman. I think we're always so open to learning. We're open to evolving, and we're not kind of land us.
Sure. Thank you so much. In closing, Slee, is there anything that you would like to share with us that I haven't asked you that you think is important to sort of put out on a platform like this? Advice to anybody in the profession? Earlier on, you had mentioned if the younger you had known XYZ, is there one person out there that you just feel like saying, listen, girl, hang in there, be patient, it's all going to fall into place eventually?
It is exactly that. I think the profession in a lot of niches, but specifically at the bar, requires an exercise of patience and faith, whatever it is you believe in. And just the waiting is long and the waiting is tough. And I am still in the middle of a storm of waiting. And it is just a game of patience. And when you tunnel vision into what it is that you want to achieve, and you go and you grab it bit by bit. I think that, I don't know, I'm rambling now, but in March of my pupillage year, I thought I knew at that time that this is not for me. I thought that this is not going to work. I just can't do this. Like, I basically live in my car and I can't. And I had a great conversation with my partner at the time, who is an example of a privilege that I would have, who was just like, you've already started, you know, just keep going. And I think what he was communicating to me is, you're being very impatient with the process, whatever the process is. And an exercise of patience is going to kind of lead to fruition that is beyond what you thought you were capable of. So what you think you know for sure sometimes isn't quite accurate. And you need to kind of exercise, and I am still exercising a lot of with my practice, with how I exert, how I show up. And I think that would be my best advice.
Sure. Thank you so much. Thank you, Slee. That brings us to the end of this beautiful conversation. Thank you so much for your time. I cannot thank you enough.
Thank you.
And all the best with you know, just the continued strides that you want to make in the legal profession. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for your time, Evelyn.
All right. Bye.
Bye.